Society of the Future. This is Sarah Chaffee. Today we have on the show with us Dr. Jeffrey Simmons, who has been a licensed and practicing physician for over 40 years. He is a lecturer, radio personality, and the author of 9 books, including What Darwin Didn't Know, which discusses intelligent design in the human body, and is now in its 10th printing. Today he joins us to talk about our extraordinary capacity to taste and smell. Dr. Simmons, give us a sense of just how sophisticated and useful our sense of taste and smell is.
The sense of smell and sense of taste run hand in hand. There's about 10,000 separate odors that we can pick up in our noses, and about 500,000 of combination odors. That's a ton, and we come with those. And those aren't developed as we get older. We actually come with those, and nobody knows why we come with them. And using those, I mean, there's a lot of things we can do with that, but we identify food for sure. We can detect danger, such as a gas leak. We can even tell the emotions of other mates if we were other animals. Humans aren't quite as good at that. And it's also just proven by this taste of my babies making sucking sounds when they're asleep and they're exposed to mom's milk. They recognize the smell of mom's milk, and they begin sucking. It's not a matter of telling them that it's coming or saying that it's coming. It's actually the smell, the scent. So when it comes to eating, if you want, one wants to demonstrate that to themselves, they just need to pinch their nose when they're eating. You'll notice that food becomes more dull, almost cardboard-like. You may be able to tell texture, volume. By looking at it, you might be able to tell color. But what does it taste like? Well, nothing. And if you had a sinus infection, you would have kind of the same thing. So without this sense of smell, when we taste things, there's only a few things we can pick up: sweet, sour, bitter, salt, maybe metallic, things like iron, and umami, which is something we see in MSG. And so it's an interesting phenomenon. Babies are born with enormous amounts of taste buds around their pharynx, at the back of the mouth, the top of the mouth, of the palate, even down to the larynx. And so it makes some sense that we would have a lot more sights for tasting when we're infant, because we need to eat, we need to taste, and especially at that time when growth is rapid. And so as you get older, that lessens. In fact, even the sense of taste gets a little different as you get older. And it's not just taste that's going on here from the nose. I mean, the nose cleanses air, it finds food.
Now, you argue that our senses of taste and smell aren't just impressively complicated. You argue that they have about them the signature of design.
Our noses have a design to them, and this is irreducible complexity among many examples of it. I mean, it's an air scoop with two sides, so you can tell where the smell is coming from. It's like an custom official over the mouth. I mean, it supervises what you're putting in your mouth. It tells you in an instant, oh, that's not good, that's putrid, or maybe that's poisonous. And so it's watching. It's very capable of doing this. And the fact that it's over the mouth, we don't know of any fossil evidence that the nose is anywhere else. In fact, there's very little evidence about noses. But if it were under the mouth, the person would be filled with food and crumbs and spaghetti. So it's going to be over the mouth, and that's how it sucks the smell. And it can't be away from the mouth. That doesn't make any sense at all. So it arrived on the mouth as if it was purposely designed to do that, and it does all the things it should do. Interesting enough, it flares when it's smelling. You can see that in animals. You can see that in people. It can flare with sex. It'll sometimes tone down with some smells that it doesn't like, and you do that without even thinking about it. It's one of the oldest senses, at least as best as we can tell. And there's about a square inch of cells in each nostril that's kind of yellowish in tissue look up the nose, and there's thousands of smell cells there. And they all have like locks and key phenomena, in other words, like doors, except every lock and key set combination is different. Like peppermint is wedge-shaped. And so a lot of electrical charges, shapes, contortions, and that tells you electronically from that point what you're smelling or what combination. There are some smells that are like primary colors. They're called primary smells or odors. Nonetheless, the things that you can pick up are mint, floral-like flowers, camphor, musk, resin, fouls and acrid. Those are the basic ones, and then you get combinations just like you do with the three primary colors. And you can tell where things are coming from, just like two eyes will tell you where things are coming from, two ears will tell you where things are coming from, well, two nostrils will tell you where it's coming from. And if it's cold air, it's warmed by the nose. If it's hot air, it might be cooled a little bit. You have hairs that filter out debris and a host of things that might not do so well getting in. You have a sneeze phenomenon that's there to get rid of stuff. Actually, it's interesting. It's 100 miles an hour that you can sneeze or greater. You have a cough as a backup. It got in. You can cough it up. Another built-in mechanism. These are all designs. These didn't come about accidentally. They're impossible to explain accidentally. And there's nothing in the fossil record to prove that this was a tiny, tiny, tiny little steps. And there are all kinds of variations. They were all wrong, but one direction. It doesn't work like that. Within the nose also, there's a called Jacobs in the Oregon, which is a detection unit for pheromones, which are the sex hormones. And indeed, when people are kissing, one wonders and one thinks, and scientists talk about it, we're actually enjoying each other's pheromones. I mean, it doesn't feel like that to anybody. It's kind of silly to say. But in actuality, why are we locking lips if it's just that? Of course, there's an intellectual component to it all. But it's pheromones that are attractive to us. And this apparatus is hardly findable. We have found it in recent times. We know it exists. And it's interesting also that the nose or the sense of smell will coordinate menstrual periods. Women who live in dorms like sororities will find that all their periods will coordinate. And the only mechanism we can think is this Jacobson's organ that senses what's going on. So we're talking about taste and we're talking about smell. They're intertwined. Life becomes pretty miserable without smell because you just can't taste anything. I've had patients who have had terrible sinus problems or cancer or radiation, and they can't taste. I mean, all they do is tell texture and maybe sweetness, so they'll have a lot of ice cream. But it's a bit of a curse.
Well, I've heard that we can taste it, like bitterness at such as like one part in 2 million. You know, how sensitive are our taste buds?
Yeah, quite. We can taste a minimum sweetness at 1 to 200. And so that's pretty easy to pick up. Salt, 1 to 400. Again, pretty easy to pick up. Sour, which is starting to get into dangerous things, putrid food, would be 1 to 130,000. And bitterness, 1 to 2 million. And so if it's that dilute, you could still pick it up. And so same thing with fecal matter. I don't have the concentration number in hand, but it's down in that area because you don't want to be eating food that or be anywhere near, in a sense, of something that's contaminated. And so, yeah, it's interesting. The taste buds are on the back of our tongue, and they are little bulbs. If you stick your tongue way out and look in the mirror, you can see them in the back. I've had patients call me up and tell me they have growths on their tongue. Turns out they just never noticed it before. And so these guys are very keyed in on these senses, and they can tell us good, bad, and different on what's going on with our food, which I mentioned earlier. And the mouth itself is actually designed too. I mean, we don't have any designs where the teeth are out of order. The teeth are in a very specific order where they chew off the food, but the slicing mechanism, they pulverize it, they put saliva in it to digest it. It prepares the food for the stomach, and it tests and analyzes it so that you will be okay, that it thinks you're okay. So the mouth is obviously designed in my book. And as I said, there is nothing, again, in the fossil record that shows mouths in other places or that shows teeth in other orders, in a different order. I mean, it's always been that way. And if it was just an accidental design, there should be a fossil record loaded with mistakes. And there aren't any. It's a direct shot if you follow evolution. And these are the big steps of evolution, how teeth come out. If you follow the small steps, it doesn't happen at all. Of course, Darwin really was worried about these small steps. When you eat, sometimes authors will talk about it being a gustatory symphony. In other words, with your ears, you hear a symphony. And you can hear the violins play if you focus in on them, or the drums. You can hear the soloists. The same thing with eyes when you see a ball game, perhaps. Well, when it comes to eating, your taste focuses in on hundreds of flavors, and that's kind of the symphony, the instrument. The meal is the performance. the clove of garlic is the soloist. And so your body and your mind and your tongue and your smell sorts that all out for you. And again, if we had to have one taste to come about once every other year and add into the other ones, we're talking about millions, if not billions of years for it to come about in a correct manner. And even if one looks at the fossil record and says the life has only been here for 4 billion years, it isn't enough.
If it smells like design, if it tastes like design, maybe it is design. Thank you, Dr. Simmons, for joining us again for another podcast on the senses. For more information, read Dr. Simmons' book, What Darwin Didn't Know. This has been Sarah Chaffee for ID the Future. Thank you for listening. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute, 2016. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org or idthefuture.com.